Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of On The Record.
It's going to be exciting.
This is going to be a special On The Record because we asked just a couple of days ago for people to post their questions to Ask Porky.
Yes.
Ask Porky, one of the most popular features that we do,
which
we haven't been able to do for a while on the radio, so we thought we should do one here.
Indeed.
And this will, of course, be there for posterity. It will be part of the On The Record podcast family scenario.
I'm here to try and change people's lives.
And you can always help.
To try and help.
You can always help with all sorts of questions. And so what we've got here is a whole series of comments and questions that we're going to give you. I'm going to go straight into them, okay?
We'll go rapid fire.
And the first one comes from somebody called Richard on Twitter,
okay,
who says, Porky, have you ever won a professional award? And if so, what is your most treasured?
Okay, I've won a broadcasting award. That was for being Broadcaster of the Year at the TalkSport Group. A few years back, and I still have that statue on top of my telly.
Broadcaster of the Year?
Yeah, Broadcaster of the
Year. What year was that then?
I can't quite remember the year because I don't, you know, keep these things high in my memory.
Really?
They come and they go, and that's just part of the job.
And you keep it where?
I did keep it on the telly until tellies became flat screens, and then, of course, there was no space on the telly to put it.
Mm.
So I now put it, like, to the side of the telly, but you have to be very, very careful. It's a glass prism, and I read this horrifying story that sometimes in the summer, the sunshine could come through the window, hit a glass prism, and set fire to your property.
Blimey.
So it's hidden away in a cupboard now.
Oh, good.
But
good
also,
idea.
I won an award with yourself for
you
overnight
and I've
broadcasting.
Won an award. That's right,
exactly.
Absolutely right. That was for the American election.
The American election, it was.
The one that Trump won.
Yeah. Yeah,
we'll talk about Trump, I'm sure, very soon.
So thank you for all your accolades.
Francis says this, do you think it's better to have loved and lost than to have never loved at all?
Yes, I do, absolutely. I mean, look, life goes through stages, it goes through decades, it goes through relationships, it goes through romances. And if you haven't experienced all those, then you really don't know the highs and lows of life. I feel sorry for people who've never got sociably involved with other people or romantically involved. I have been. It never ended up with marriage for me. I don't have any children. But I can't have any regrets about that because I know a lot of people who married for marrying's sake, who had children because they thought they should, and their lives turn out to be miserable in the end. And it's a silly thing to do. It's just, sorry, what are you laughing
at? It's a great message, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, so just don't bother.
I'm telling you, lots of people thought, oh, I'm at 28 now, met a girl who's 25.
I know someone who did that.
Yeah, exactly. I think I'll just get married. I know lots of people who've done it, and it's just turning into a disaster, and you've left a couple of children then who haven't got parents who are a family unit, and you've got, you know, broken families and all sorts of things. So although a lot of people have had a go at me over the years and say, whoa, you're too selfish ever to get married. No, I wasn't. I was just too responsible not to leave in the wake of my failed marriage, you know, human debris.
Indeed. You just left the human debris without getting married.
No, I
didn't. Yes, you did.
No, I didn't. Well, I looked after everybody I've ever encountered.
Yeah, you paid them all off.
No,
so
I didn't pay them all off. I made sure they're okay.
Yeah, James says this. How smart is the average bear?
The average bear is pretty smart.
Yeah.
But as I've told you before, the average bear's mission in life is to feed itself.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
So the average bear...
See, there was a polar bear born in Scotland the other day.
Yes, I did, yeah.
First polar bear time cub. In 25 years.
But you see, I've had a rant against zoos lately, and to have a polar bear born in captivity is horrifying. a polar bear should live in the Arctic, the vast swathes of the Arctic, not in a concrete cell in Scotland.
What about the Antarctic?
It's outrageous. No, there's no polar bears in the Antarctic.
Yeah. Why can't I live there?
Because they live in the Arctic, okay. and the penguins live in the Antarctic. Yeah. You know, it's quite as simple as that.
Okay.
So what I would say is a bear is quite clever, because what a bear does, a grizzly or a black bear, be very careful if they're chasing you. All they'll do is get you to the ground. Mm. They'll put their left foot on your stomach to keep you there, and then with their mighty claws, with their long tearing claws.
Are you making out that they're upright at this point?
No, they're bending over your body now.
They're on all fours, aren't they?
Yeah. And they will tear the flesh off your body.
By the time you've got to that stage, you're pretty much done.
Well, yeah, but it's a pretty painful way to go. They will tear the flesh off your body because they like hot meals, and they prefer to eat a human alive than dead. Yeah, because... Mm. No, they do, and that's what they do.
Yeah.
And I've told you this before, and I was told this by a bear expert. The best way to save yourself from a bear is to get two branches if you're in the forest where the bear is, and to try and put something in between, like
a towel,
raise it above your head.
Yeah.
It makes you look as though you're 8 or 9 feet tall.
Yeah.
And if you growl and go,
it wouldn't work in your case, would it?
And just shut up, will you? And wave, the bear will run away.
Really?
Yes.
That's not going to help if the bear's on top of you at this point, right?
Well, no, make sure the bear doesn't get on top of you.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Pardon me if I managed to get through this one.
Yeah.
Billy says, how did your paths cross in the early days, and why did it take so long to exploit your chemistry?
A
leading question.
Yeah, I can answer all of that. We first met, of course, in Costello's in round about the early 1980s, right?
83, I think, wasn't it?
And we then pursued, like, separate routes through print journalism.
Yes.
And in print journalism, you don't work as duos normally.
No.
Unless you got one of these jobs like your guys used to have at the Mirror sometimes, you know, investigation by, you know
what
I mean?
Sometimes you get a photographer and like Danny McGrory and John Downey.
Well, funny enough, Danny McGrory and John Downey, right, they put themselves up as, you know, Fleet Street's top international, you know, investigators.
Well, they were very brave. They did a lot of war stuff together.
One time, there was a leaving do somewhere in Fleet Street, and Danny McGrory had just come back from, like, going across the hills in Afghanistan and all that. And I praised him openly. I didn't get on that well with Danny.
Yeah.
But I said, look, the terribly brave thing you've done there. Mm. They were sending back pictures of them with, bulletproof vests on in the streets of Kabul and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I said, this is very, very brave stuff, you know. So they do work as a duo like that. But where Danny McGrory and Downing shot their bolts was, you know, when the new newspaper Today came out?
Yes.
They started leaking rumours into, you know, editors' ears and all that kind of stuff, that David Montgomery, who was the editor of Today, Today had been founded by Eddie Shah, but then it had been bought out.
It was Britain's first colour newspaper.
Britain's first colour newspaper.
I was the first American correspondent.
Absolutely, of course you were, Shah Vision and all that, was very shaky. But then it was bought over by the Murdoch Group, right?
Yes.
And then they invested money in it. I think David Montgomery took over and was made not just editor, he was made managing director of the paper and told to make it work.
Yeah.
And of course, at that stage, old McGrory and Downing started touring the bars of Fleet Street saying, oh, you know, I've had a huge offer from David Montgomery to go there and be Fleet Street's top foreign correspondent.
Yeah, yeah.
And, of course...
It was all Bloxios.
It was all Bloxios. And I've had people do that to me over my career. And I said, really? Sounds like a great offer. You must take it. You must go.
Yeah, yeah.
And the moment you say that, then I'm afraid all the fantasy collapses. Yeah,
exactly right. Mm. Dom says this. What's the most important thing you've learned from life since two-thirds of your heart stopped working?
I think the most important thing I've learned from life is... get on with it day by day, to be honest. I mean, it's no good long planning. The thing is that people who I've known who had no previous record of a heart condition, and I'll tell you who one of them is, it was Ross Benson, who took his little lad to a Chelsea game one night.
He was a smoker, though, wasn't he?
Well, you know, we've all been smokers at various stages of our life. You've been
a very heavy smoker.
Yeah, but I mean, they came back from Chelsea, and because he had a wife who earned a lot of money and had good connections, they lived in quite a nice pad somewhere in Chelsea or Belgravia or somewhere like that. Went to bed and never woke up. My my great mate, Colin, who I told you about, on the boat in Venice, he had no history of heart trouble whatsoever.
Mm.
But he went to bed one night on the boat, and when it docked in Venice the next day, they couldn't get into his cabin, and he never woke up. And they assumed these people died of heart symptoms. So I do not worry about dropping dead tomorrow, even though I've got dilated cardiomyopathy. And, of course, it could happen. It could happen to anybody else.
Mm.
Just go on day by day. That's all you can do.
Okay. Gary says, has the world become a worse place because of social media?
It's become a more complicated place, no doubt about it. And if you have the urge to communicate, like you and I have, you're incredibly careful how you communicate and how you do it.
Well, I see Toby Young's currently getting it in the neck for some things that he's been doing.
I totally agree. But also, you know, the amount of damage you can do to yourself. And I've met some very highly educated people, you know, particularly among sport writers like Paddy Barclay or something like that.
Yeah.
Who've suddenly realised they've written something and not appreciated the significance of it or the damage it might do or something. You've got to be incredibly careful.
Yeah.
And you should always, I think, read something two or three times again. Now, but sometimes, you know, sometimes people just react with fury and a lot of people have done it and had to apologise the next day. But all in all, social media has to be a good thing. If more people are talking, I even think social media is good for the President of the United States of America, Donald Trump, who, you know, amazingly this week has been tweeting out to the leader of North Korea.
My button's bigger than your button.
I've got a bigger nuclear button than you have.
Right, did you see Matt's cartoon, by the way, which I thought was brilliant?
What was that?
Is it just he's got a big button, or is it just because his hands are very small? It actually looks bigger.
Yeah, exactly. And I have to say that when there's that level of communication, does that ease tensions or increase them? Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I think I'm with you. I think the more you know about the president, the better it is.
Exactly.
And the fact that you can either make fun of him or take whatever you want from it, I think the fact that he's doing it is brilliant.
Yeah.
Here's one about football from Jamie from Facebook. Who are your three favourite teams to go down this year, please? I presume he means this season.
You're talking about from the Premier League,
I think so, yes.
Well, I think Huddersfield will go because I don't think they've got big enough infrastructure to stay there. I think Palace probably will. I don't want them to. They're the nearest Premier League club to me, and we know people at Palace. And they're a very well-run club.
We like the Palace people.
But the thing is, I think they were handed such a huge negative after their first manager left. You know, what's his name? Ronald de Boer. That's right.
That he only lost four in a row.
He lost four in a row. But then the problem was in the interim before Roy Hodgson came in and lost another three, didn't
they? Yes, it did.
So it was a terrible legacy, and I'm not sure if they'll get back. And then Swansea look as though they've got a bit of a problem to me.
Yeah. They don't look good. Mm. Stephen says this: will you be reviewing McMafia on Porky Vision anytime soon? It's a shame Julia Hezmondula's not in it.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, Julia Hezmondula. Yeah. Now
I've been watching it actually. It's good.
I saw the first episode. Have you seen the second as well?
I have watched it last
night. Okay. Well, I saw the first episode, and amazingly, I put on my Skybox record thing. Mm. Right. And so
you didn't get that from the warehouse. You say
I didn't
got
get
the
from
phone.
The warehouse. So the following morning, you know, I think right, I'll have a look at McMafia now because I was with the family last night.
I still don't know why it's called McMafia.
No, I don't either.
So nothing to do with Scotland.
No, or Ireland or anything else. No. You know, I'm not sure. So excuse me. So anyway, I sat down in front of my goggle box and go to my recorded programmes. It's not there. I couldn't believe it. And then, guess what? The following morning, it is there. And I thought, well, that's amazing. But it wasn't. It was the second episode.
Right.
So it recorded the first, but not the second.
Oh, right.
But I have to say, James Norton, I think...
It'll be on iPlayer, though, won't it?
I saw the first one on iPlayer. But I was going to say it was. What I thought was really true to life about it was, when the murder scene in the first episode, which you and I have both seen, right, happened... and James Norton ran away, they didn't suddenly turn him into a James Bond character, you know, smashing people's noses and punching people up, throwing them off balconies. He just ran away. You know what I mean? He just, that's all he could do.
Yeah.
And he ran down into the cellars and got himself out of the way and all that kind of stuff. So I thought it was pretty true to life.
Okay. Here's one from Patrick. He says, we'd love to know if Porky's next venture is a real estate agent, as the way he describes his one-bedroom, crime-ridden gospel flat as a penthouse luxury apartment says to me he has the gift of being able to sell snow to the Eskimos.
Well, it's not one bedroom. It's two, with two bathrooms and a balcony. And it is in an aspect which makes it like penthouse.
You see, you're talking like an estate agent.
Not at all. And I have to say, it's great to have a place like that. It's a bit of a getaway, but it's a big responsibility living in more than one home. It's tiring. You have to keep an eye on everything.
Mm.
And you travel around a lot to get there. And the problem is, you and I now work most weekends, you know, if not every weekend.
Yeah, I once told you I didn't work at weekends.
That's right.
You remember those days?
No, you do. I like to get away to see Everton when I can.
Yeah.
My mum's getting older and I should go down to Bournemouth and see more of her.
Yeah.
So it's not always a good thing to have a second home.
No,
sometimes it puts pressure on you because you think, well, I better go.
Indeed. John says, Porky, which fellow journalists and news colleagues do you hold in the highest regard after your long, illustrious career?
Well, I hold all my colleagues at TalkSport in very high regard because to get to the level of presenting a daily show on Britain's biggest commercial radio station, you've got to be pretty damn good. I also hold in high regard other people who work for other organisations because of their longevity and the way that they've kept it going for such a long time.
Yeah.
In print journalism, too many to number, because there were some terrific guys
there.
But we were very lucky, Mike, you and I, and we made the cross. We crossed over the Rubicon from print to radio. Mm. And the only other guy I know who's done that as successfully as us is Nick Ferrari.
Yes.
Because Nick was features editor on The Mirror when I was executive editor on The Sun. And he too has transformed himself.
He has.
And I was part of that because we took him on as the first breakfast show on TalkSport. Yes. In the very early days when we were still in Oxford Street.
Mm, indeed.
Yeah.
One from White. Simply, Porky, what are your New Year's resolutions?
Well, I don't like New Year's resolutions. I think they're a waste of time. I think they're rubbish, I have to say. Anybody who says, right, now I've got New Year's resolution, I get up every day and I resolve to do my best that day. I resolve to put things right today that went wrong tomorrow. I resolve to make new steps today. I resolve to push forward today. I resolve to come up with new ideas, a new passion for life, and a new direction for myself in life. You don't need
Why
a new...
Why slapping yourself like some kind of mad German?
Yeah. And so you don't need a New Year's Day, in my view, or a New Year's Eve, to make resolutions. Make a resolution to yourself every day. Do your best and get on with it.
Here's one from JK, which follows on nicely. Who can handle his drink better, Porky or MG? How did Porky start supporting a bang average team? And what does the future hold for the two mics?
Future for the two mics is brilliantly bright. I can tell you that now, because we're both determined to keep going and improve every day, as it is with resolutions, OK? I'm not going to answer the stupid question about where I supported Everton. Everybody knows that. That's three generations ago. My grandfather, best friend of Dixie Dean. And the third one was what?
The third one was who can handle a drink better, you or I.
It depends on the circumstances,
the
conditions, what we're drinking, where we're drinking, and who in whose company we are.
How about this one from Mark? Mr. Parry, would you consider doing Strictly Come Dancing? We'd love to see you in a sequined shirt, undone to the waist, strutting your stuff on the Strictly dance floor.
That would honestly depend on how much I was offered to do it, because I think every man has his price. Every woman has her price, probably.
Is that right?
You know, in terms of dancing and Strictly Come Dancing.
Well, I assumed you were talking about dance.
Yeah, exactly.
You were talking about anything else.
Yeah.
How about this one from Pierre? Dear Porky, have you been to Horsham? If so, is it nice? I hope so, because I'm moving down there this year with the wife.
Horsham's great.
Horsham's
great.
Is that in Hampshire?
No. Horsham is in Sussex.
Is it?
And it's just beyond Gatwick Airport, OK? Mm. So get to Horsham, go down the M23.
Oh, is it near sort of Haywards Heath, that way?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, go past Gatwick and then turn a right and you go into Horsham. In fact, my financial advisor is in Horsham, who is raising some dosh at the moment to restructure a few things in the old Porky portfolio.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, that's
right. Well, that's way too much information.
And in fact, I'm due to go
down
there.
You mean flogging a few properties?
No, not at all, no. And I'm due to go down there early next week.
Oh, yeah.
And what we normally do is we come out of his office. This man's a teetotaler, by the way.
Is he?
He's the best of us, yeah.
I suppose that's good, isn't it, if he's your accountant?
Yeah,
already had that episode with the drunken accountant who was no use.
I did, yeah.
David Smith. The guy who you kicked off.
He was useless.
Sort of into touch.
Yeah, how much did you earn last year, Mike? Right, give 55% of it to Gordon Brown.
Yeah.
Hang on, what about all the allowances? Yeah. What? Sorry, give me another drink, yeah, and all that
He's
kind of
He's the guy
stuff.
Whose wife left him for the...
for the gardener.
For the gardener, and kicked him out of the house.
And then she died,
right.
and the gardener inherited the house. It was unbelievable.
That's shocking,
I know, that is shocking.
It's one of the worst stories of all time.
And he had to walk past the house each morning to go to the station.
Guy. Absolutely shocking.
And walk past his own house, which he didn't own anymore, but neither did his wife, who died of cancer. Mm. It was owned by the former gardener.
Shocking.
Amazing. Yeah.
We'll take a little pause here, listen to this, and then we'll be back with some more Ask Porkies.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Right, got one here from Lee. Mike, he says, if you were condemned to the death penalty, what would your last meal be? Ham and pineapple pizza, a Wetherspoons fish and chips, or just go for a liquid lunch of Pinot Grigio?
I wouldn't go for a liquid lunch of Pinot Grigio. I'd want to have my head about me as the noose tightened around my throat.
Wouldn't you rather be completely oblivious to
that? No, I wouldn't. That's a coward's
way. It's a bit like if you're in a plane and it starts to crash. Mm. Would you not want to be just drinking as much as possible so that...
Well, you don't get long. I mean, by the time they brought the drinks down, the trolley and
you wouldn't be waiting for the drinks trolley. You'd be up there, you know, necking it like we were on that British Airways flight.
Yeah, well, maybe. Well,
I was looking up there when I was looking for the champagne.
Yeah, that's right.
You don't wait for them. I'm sorry, if the plane's crashing.
That was disgraceful. disgraceful behaviour, by the way.
No, it wasn't. It British was, Airways were very happy with us.
And you ended up with two large... what was that red drink? I mean, they're vodkas.
Well, no, you got me two large vodkas.
Yeah, that's right.
Because you couldn't decide which to get me. So you got me a vodka and... They didn't have cranberry juice, I think.
Yeah.
They got me a vodka and some kind of weird liqueur.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Like raspberry liqueur.
That's right, something like that.
And
yeah,
a vodka
yeah.
and some other kind of you know, concoction.
It's true.
Neither of which I wanted, but which you gave me when I woke up.
You drank them both.
I did, yeah.
Let me tell you this. No, I'd go for the pizza, I think, because although fish and chips has always been my favourite meal,
yeah,
I've now started eating fish and chips without the chips.
Really?
Yeah,
I prefer... Well, it's not really fish and chips, then, is
no,
it?
I prefer... Instead of having fish, chips and peas now,
yeah,
I prefer two pieces of fish and the peas.
Okay.
Because I don't know why. The chips start to bloat me now, so I've decided to do without them.
I think it depends on the chips as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, yeah. Mm. I agree, yeah. Mm. In fact, I prefer sort of chips you get in McDonald's, like stringy chips.
This is the very thin ones.
Yeah.
French fries.
Yeah, French fries. I don't like the big chips. No.
Okay. How about this one from Ian? He says, "Hi, guys. Has there ever been a time in your journalistic career when you've thought, hang on, I'm in real trouble here. Maybe a story you were working on got a bit dangerous."
Well, there's been a couple of times. I mean, the point is you've got to be so careful you get everything right because one story got wrong could... ruin your career.
Yeah.
However, having said that, Fleet Street was a very small village, and those who made mistakes always bounced back. Mm. Probably one of the biggest mistakes
ever.
Well,
it depended on the mistake as well, didn't it?
It depended on the mistake, but one of the biggest mistakes ever was the former editor of the Sunday Times publishing Hitler's diaries, believing they were Hitler's diaries.
And that was Andrew Neil, wasn't it?
That was Andrew Neil.
Yeah.
And they weren't. But, no. I mean, you know, he would...
But that wasn't just his mistake,
No. He would have taken every possible precaution, and he did.
Yeah.
He talked to some of the greatest European historians of both fact and people who were handwriting experts and everything else and came to the conclusion it was true. If you are... turned over by a master forger, and that doesn't just exist in journalism.
No.
We've seen people buy paintings for millions of pounds, which have been pure forgeries, then you are unlucky.
Yeah.
But because Fleet Street is a small village, often it doesn't mean the end.
No.
We've all gone down that way. Piers Morgan
lost his job over what was called the fake Iraq pictures.
He always
said, you know, that he believed them to be true pictures. He had a brother who's still in the army.
Do you think they looked real?
I didn't. As soon as I saw them, I thought they looked fake.
Yeah, so did I.
And I didn't think for a minute that they could be possibly understood to be real.
Piers
is a good friend of mine, as you know.
Yeah.
He's never said anything other than he believed them to be true.
They looked staged, and managed.
They did look.
They looked posed.
They didn't look as if they were taken at all in a way which was...
And the photographer had far too much access.
Yeah.
They should have been snatched pictures.
His point was later, which is why I've always found it interesting, that it turned out that the pictures were depicting something that had actually happened.
Yeah.
So I wonder whether that was the reason why they were published and there was some other, you know, darker force at work. But, I mean, it hasn't exactly harmed his career.
Of course it hasn't harmed his career. I mean, you know, when these setbacks come along, you've got to pick yourself up.
But people who criticise him for it always get the wrong end of the stick because they criticise it by saying, you put our men in danger, put our boys in danger by publishing those pictures. Absolute rubbish, right?
Yeah.
And as he says himself, his own brother is in the army.
I was about to
say.
And
his own brother has been in the army for all these years.
Yeah, but I was about to say, with his own brother being in the army, I'd have thought his own brother could have got inside information as to the veracity of them or not.
Yeah.
So I was quite surprised it went ahead. But anyway, look, as you quite rightly say...
The question was, have you ever been in danger?
I can't think of anything that I ever authorised to be published or which I wrote myself, which has got me in trouble, apart from the one you keep mentioning, which is Kate Adie.
Yes.
But I was ordered to write that by an editor.
Yeah, that was dangerous,
wasn't it? It was dangerous to my reputation.
For your career,
Because I ended up in the High Court having to apologise to Kate Adie.
But, you know, you have no reputation left to protect.
Well, that's very nice, isn't it? Yeah, I accused her of getting too close to Colonel Gaddafi.
Yes.
You know, sort of nudge,
wink, wink.
You accused
her of sleeping with him, practically.
No, I didn't. No.
Practically
no. No suggestion of that whatsoever.
Really? Andrew from Aberdeen says, who is or was the funniest person you've ever met?
The funniest person I think I've ever met is probably Freddie Starr.
Really?
But I mean, in very small doses, you know what I mean? You know, when you'd see him and he'd talk and crack jokes and all that kind of stuff. One of the unfunniest people, I think, that was ever around was Dick Emery. And I remember our great mate who wrote a book on his newspaper tabloid career, and he writes great crime books now. You know the guy I'm talking about? He was at the Sunday Mirror.
Yes, Wesley Clarkson.
Wesley Clarkson.
Yeah,
Daniel
we
Richard
had him in one of the shows recently.
We did. Wesley came in. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember. Funny enough, it was when my heart was being operated on. You know, back in 2004, and my friends had brought me a load of books, and one of them was on tabloid career.
Yeah.
And he had to mine Dick Emery. to write a series on Dick Emery.
Right.
And so, you know, he was writing his stuff and all that. He said, oh, by the way, Dick, he said, what's the funniest joke you've ever told? And Dick Emery sort of looked at him and said, you know, that way that Dick Emery does. What? What's the funniest joke you've ever told? What's your funniest joke? Yeah. Tell us a joke. He said, what do you mean? So, you know, I want you to tell me a joke, Dick. He says, go and ask my agent.
Yeah.
I don't need to think about jokes. Right. I mean, literally, it was kind of, you know, what are you talking about? Which proves a lot of the, you know, truth is all about them reading scripts that the script writers have written and all that kind of stuff. And enacting the actual drama of it, which is the true genius of their talent, you know.
Yes, and making it into something other than just a joke.
Yes.
How about this from Paul? Which are the best and worst football stadiums you've been to? I suppose you could have two of each if you wish.
Well, I mean, look, obviously, your own team stadium, mine's Goodison Park, obviously, you remember with great warmth and first time you went there and all that kind of stuff. The best after that, I would say, would have to be, although this might not be a popular choice, the Olympic Stadium in Berlin, purely from the fact that it's still there from being built in the 30s, and they didn't knock it down like they knocked down Wembley.
Right.
And what they did is they restructured the roof and all that kind of stuff, and they played the World Cup final there in 2006. The worst, without a shadow of a doubt, has to be the one that we went to see England play Belarus, which was a shack.
Yeah.
FIFA shouldn't have allowed football to be played there, you know? And it was the same in Croatia. The stadium there was very poor.
Was that in Zagreb?
That was in Zagreb.
They were at a decent stadium. Wasn't they, Dynamo Zagreb?
Yeah, but it wasn't their stadium. It was somebody else's. Yeah. You know, I don't know whose it was. And then I suppose if you look at football locally, when I've seen Everton play, you know, teams in the FA Cup, probably somewhere like Scunthorpe or something like that. But there's a beauty in those stadiums because half the people are standing, and it reminds me of when I used to follow Chester as a kid.
Yeah, you know, I remember going to see Dagenham in Redbridge play because a friend of mine's dad was a director.
Yeah, sure.
And I sat in the box. It was when Brentford were playing them because obviously he knew of my attachment to Brentford. As you know, I'm very close
you're
to that particular club.
Yeah, that's right.
And it was when Greg Dyke was the chairman.
Oh, right,
And I sat in the director's box, which was literally not a box at all.
No, it was about 12 seats.
It was about 12 seats, and it was about 3 feet away from the touchline.
That's right.
And you felt like you were actually in a dugout.
Yeah.
You know, but it was great. I quite enjoyed it.
Well, I mean,
we sat in the restaurant, which was rather more grandly described as a restaurant than it should have been.
Yeah.
And we had a very nice roast dinner.
I know.
Brilliant. Before the game, it was great.
Brilliant.
I must say.
The very worst one was the original Chester Stadium, Sealand Road, where I used to go on my own. It was the first time when I was 8.
Was that the one where they had the cop?
Oh, they had the cop. It was made of rubble.
Right.
What happened was, after the Second World War, they got these bulldozers in and they just pushed this load of rubble together, right, put a few planks on it and called it the Zion Cop.
Yes.
You know, at Chester.
Yeah.
The stadium was so bad that the loos didn't work, right? They didn't. I mean, they, you know, you would catch something
well,
like...
Well, I remember going to Hampden Park
malaria
in
going
Scotland
into the loos,
and various other grounds up there. Yeah. And people were just peeing down the back off the...
Oh, it was dreadful.
Off the back of the terraces.
So the loos didn't work. There were no facilities. The chairs were all broken. The Oxo they served at half-time was in... You know, you couldn't drink in it. It was absolutely appalling.
Mm.
And from the outside... The stadium was completely falling to pieces. For instance, when it rained, everybody got wet.
Yeah.
Didn't matter if you said, oh, we're undercover. You weren't. There were holes in the roof.
Absolutely shocking. Now, how about this one from Jonathan?
Yeah.
He says it's a question for both mics, but I'll let you answer it. Will we as a nation be better off post-Brexit?
Well, do you know what? I didn't vote in Brexit because I didn't know which way to vote because I thought, I'm not sure if I'm going to condemn this country to purgatory if we stay in or if we get out, right?
Yeah.
So I held my hands up and say, OK, you know, so you shouldn't have a voice on this, but I've got a voice on it because the point is the majority said get out. I think, therefore, you've got to say it's got to be given a chance because a majority, albeit a small one, wanted it. However... You have to look at the economic signals and say, is it working? And it quite honestly depends on which broadcast you listen to or which paper you read as to whether it's working or not. So again, I think our fate is in the hands of the gods, and I simply don't know.
Indeed. How about this one from Ryan? A bit more complicated, this question. Please assist me in this workplace matter, as I feel you are the only one who can be trusted to give an honest answer. I have found out that a member of my team, who has been massively slacking recently, is living a double life. He says they are having homosexual drug-induced orgies, and this is affecting production at work, as they spend most of the day nodding off. How do I approach the matter, and what do I say to HR?
Excuse me. Who's that from?
This is from somebody called Ryan.
Ryan, do you not know this is a family show?
Yes, it's a shocking question to ask.
And that we don't actually indulge in processing orgies of any kind in or outside of the workplace affecting members of or not of your workforce.
Yes.
And quite frankly, people's private lives, you know, should be left to themselves. Mm. And if you're not happy with the way that reflects on their work performance,
yes,
you have to take them aside and you have to lay the law down.
Yes.
But, I mean, other than that, I do not wish to get involved.
Quite right, too.
No.
How about this one from Phil? What were flies put on this earth for, and why is it so hard to kill the annoying things?
Flies were, in fact, a product of amoeba waste, actually.
Amoeba waste?
Amoeba waste,
is that
yeah,
right?
That's right, yeah. And what didn't become intelligent became a fly, so to speak, you know?
Mm.
And they're not that hard to get rid of. They're just hard to pin down. I mean, if you got a fly spray, because I have one in the summer. You've
got to be careful with that stuff, though.
You've got to be
quite
careful.
It's toxic.
No, I agree. But if you hit a fly full blast, you know, as though you were, you know, seriously, they drop. You know, there's no doubt about it. So they're not that hard to get rid of.
They're not.
And get all the right boxes.
But
you know,
be careful you don't spray your food with that stuff.
No, no, listen, I only do it when I know they're heading to the outside door.
Is
you know
right?
what I mean? Yeah, give them a boost along the way.
Yeah, great.
And, of course, you can get all these things that they stick to and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm not keen on that.
No.
When I worked in the bakery, we used to have that, you know, one of those...
That glowing box.
The glowing sort of U-shaped bulb.
Yeah, and
which
did it
used
work?
To, well, it worked very well.
Yes.
And the worst thing was it would get flies very quickly.
Yeah.
But the worst one would be the big wasps and bees it would get because they would actually take seconds to burn, and they would burn. You'd see them attaching to this thing, and it'd be like,
burn, smoke coming off the thing. Fire.
And you could actually smell. No, you could smell the insects
burning.
Burn. It's horrible.
Did any of them ever drop in the dough?
No.
No?
No, no. No, because there's a tray.
Oh, I see.
Because
it
goes behind the kind of wire,
and
then they drop into a tray.
Yeah.
What are your strengths and weaknesses, Porky, says Graham?
My strengths are loyalty to my friends. My strengths
That's
are...
That's the best one yet.
...are industry.
Yeah.
My strengths,
that's true.
My strengths are, you know, compassion.
Yeah, very compassionate.
My strengths are, you know, I would say being able to figure things out pretty quickly. My weaknesses are overgenerosity.
Technology.
Definitely technology,
yeah.
But you don't, you know, technology is not a failing. Technology
it's a
is
weakness.
An education.
It's a weakness.
No, it's not a weakness.
How's
no.
it not a weakness?
No, weakness means something that you are emotionally devoid
well,
of.
Well, that's your
no,
definition.
No. No, I'm not emotionally devoid of anything. You know,
really?
I have great compassion for people in life.
Okay.
And I try and help people who are less fortunate than me.
This is everyone, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Jag says this, "Dear Porky, I've decided to give up booze this year after years of heavy drinking.
Yeah.
However, I need some advice as to alternatives to avoid the urge and prevent any withdrawal symptoms."
Well, I'm sorry, but you've got to do it yourself, man. If you think that, oh, right, I've given up booze, what shall I do? You know, I think I'll take up cannabis, you know, or I think I'll take up, you know, some, you know, prescription-type drug or something like that. You're mad. I'm afraid that it's if you've got an addiction and that's what alcohol becomes,
then well, not for everyone.
Not for everyone, of course not. But if you're into the situation where you think you've got to give it up, then you've just got to go cold turkey. And that's, of course, an expression about 1 minute being dependent on some form of drug and the next minute having to dispense with it altogether. And you've got to get over that pain, man. And, you know, people who I admire are people like... who's that Midlands comedian? You know, Birmingham
well, you
accent.
Admire him, so you must know his name.
Yeah,
or Jasper Carrot.
No, not Jasper Carrot. The other guy who Badiel, and you know,
it's Frank Skinner.
Skinner. I mean, he gave it up years ago, 20 years ago, and still doesn't drink, and yet has a very successful life. I admire
I
people like that.
I didn't realise you admired him.
Yeah, right, well, I do for doing
nearly
that.
Nearly finished here with the questions.
Yeah.
We've got loads more, and we thank everybody for sending in these
Ask Porky
questions.
Thank you very much
indeed. We will be doing more Ask Porkies here on the Record. How about this from Zag?
Yeah.
Who says, Porky, have you got any tricks or ways to cheat on how to get a free upgrade? And he's talking specifically about travel. So he's talking about planes and trains and that kind of thing.
Well, if you work in our business, then you obviously have a... an advantage, because you are in ways able to talk about, you know, the journey you've made and to a public audience and that kind of stuff, you know.
Oh, yeah.
However,
well, like a trade-off.
However, I've found out in the past, particularly in America sometimes, just by being incredibly polite as an Englishman, you know what I mean, during a difficult check-in when everybody else around you is moaning and you keep your calm and all that kind of stuff, can often work. And you find yourself getting on the plane and being shown left rather than right, you know.
Yes.
That's happened to me a couple of times. My natural charm...
In ways of upgrading yourself on British Rail or rail networks, you sometimes just go and sit there, don't you?
Well, no. No, no, no.
Well, I've been with you when you've done that.
Yeah, but I've always paid for the seat.
No, you haven't.
But I've always volunteered to pay for the seat if somebody comes along and asks.
Yeah, but you haven't done that either.
Well, nobody's ever come along and asked.
Well, do you remember that time we went to Crystal Palace?
Crystal Palace,
and
yes.
And you made me go and sit in the first class section of the train.
Oh, right, did I?
When we were going from Victoria down to Croydon.
Right.
And then the guy appeared just as we were getting off.
Right.
and said if he'd known that it was you,
yes,
because he recognised you,
yes,
and if he'd known that you'd jumped in there, yes, without paying, he would have thrown you off the train.
Really?
That's what he said.
That's a very violent reaction,
well,
isn't
that's
it?
That's what he said.
Presumably having a joke.
I don't think so.
No, I think he was.
I don't think so.
I think he was. I think he was just glad to have me on board his train. Really? You know what I mean? He'd have gone home that night and he'd have got to his pub, you know, his the railway tavern.
Yeah, yeah.
And he'd have said, guess who had on my train today?
Yeah.
That old Porky Parry.
I wish they'd thrown him off. Final question from Steve on Facebook. Have you got any predictions for 2018?
I don't make predictions because, to be honest, it's guesswork. However, I would like to say that I hope the world economy improves, because that's good for all of us, OK?
Yeah.
I hope there will be world peace, because that's good for all of us.
Well, you miss world now.
Kind of, yeah. And I also hope that in some way we can start moving towards closing down zoos, because they are an anachronism in the 21st century.
Well, as long as you're no longer a friend of Chester Zoo,
I'm not
then people
Chester
might
Zoo
go along
anymore.
With it.
No.
So where are you putting that money now, then?
No. Once I got past the, you know, this charade of, well, it's all for research, you know, keep animals alive. What animal wants to be kept alive? An elephant be kept alive to live in a concrete bunker?
Yeah, well, right? It's probably better to be alive than dead, though.
No, it's not. It's better to be dead and noble than alive and locked in a concrete bunker.
If you say so.
If you're an elephant.
All right.
Believe me.
Listen.
I can think like an elephant.
I know. You can sometimes sound like one as well. That was Ask Porky.
Yeah.
This is On the Record.
Yeah. I can't think of anything that I ever authorised to be published or which I wrote myself, which has got me in trouble, apart from the one you keep mentioning, which is Kate Ady.
Yes.
But I was ordered to write that by an editor.
Yeah, that was dangerous.
That was dangerous. Well, it was dangerous to my reputation.
For your career, yeah.
Because I end up in the High Court having to apologise to Kate Ady.
But, you know, as you have no reputation left to protect.
Well, that's very nice, isn't it? Yeah, I accused her of getting too close to Colonel Gaddafi.
Yes.
You know, sort of nudge, wink, wink.
You accused her of sleeping with him, practically.
No, I didn't. No.
Practically
did. No suggestion of that whatsoever. Ryan, do you not know this is a family show?
Yes, it's a shocking question to ask.
And that we don't actually indulge in processing orgies of any kind in or outside of the workplace, affecting members of or not of your workforce.
Yes.
And quite frankly, people's private lives, you know, should be left to themselves. Mm. And if you're not happy with the way that reflects on their work performance,
yes,
you have to take them aside and you have to lay the law down.
Yes.
But, I mean, other than that, I do not wish to get involved.
Quite right, too.
No. Let me tell you this. No, I'd go for the pizza, I think, because although fish and chips has always been my favourite meal,
yeah,
I've now started eating fish and chips without the chips.
Really?
Yeah, I
prefer... Well, it's not really fish and chips, then, is it?
No.
Well, it's probably better to be alive than dead, though.
No, it's not. It's better to be dead and noble than alive and locked in a concrete bunker.
If you say so.
If you're an elephant.
All right.
Believe me.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.